Oh yeah, Islam being slavery being permitted in Islam. So I spoke about this kind of a couple of months ago with Mansur and Sabur, and one of the claims that came up, and Shamsi as well. And one of the claims that came up was that they're more like servants. It's not as though kind of they were forced to be slaves.
So is your contention is that Islam forces human beings to be slaves?
Yeah.
Okay, in that case, I'll give you one piece of evidence. That's in chapter number 24, verse number 33 of the Quran, which talks about a process called Mukataba. Mukataba is the idea that the slave, and they were called slaves at the time, where the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he came to forbid that. He said, you can't call them slaves and you can't call masters. This whole thing, it cannot exist anymore. But those individuals who are, you can say, indentured servants, those individuals who were, let's say, trapped against their will, prisoners, if you will, they were prisoners, who were captured as a result of wars, or they were already in the pre-existing slave trade before the Prophet Muhammad came, they could do something called Mukataba. Now, what is Mukataba? Mukataba is the idea that the indentured servant goes to the master and says to the master, I demand to be freed. Now, according to Tafsir al-Qurtubi, who is one of the main seminal tafsir, which is the exegesis, he says that if an indentured servant, someone who is referred to commonly as a slave, comes forward and says that I want to be freed and ransom myself, in other words, I want to pay, let's say, 100 dinar, and I'll ransom myself, there's two opinions among the classical jurists. One of them, which is attributed to the classical companion, to the companions, Umar ibn Khattab and Anas ibn Malik, is that if an indentured servant, who's a prisoner in the home, comes forward and says, look, I want to be free, yeah? Here's a contract and I'll ransom myself for 200 dinar, yeah? In other words, I'm going to, like they do in America, you know, ransoming and all this kind of thing, prisons. That what's necessary is that he has to do that. In other words, he has to be freed. Who says that? Al-Qurtubi says that in his tafsir, as one of two opinions, and many others say that in their tafsir. Having said that, this would mean to say, and the only condition is, in alama fihim khayra, if they know in them good. So in other words, if they are people that are not, let's say, murderers or rapists or someone who wants to create some kind of corruption in the land, they have good in them. If that condition is fulfilled, there's no reason to imprison someone in their house if they are telling them the person that they want to be free. So you could say from this perspective, Islam is the only religion in the whole world that has come to do away completely with the pre-existing framework, the slavery framework that we have.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of like counter-evidences here. Muhammad's wife, Juwaria, is that how you pronounce her name?
Juwaria,
Was she not initially a captive who asked Muhammad, can I be free at first? And Muhammad said no. And then after that happened, her father came and tried to pay ransom to get her back. And Muhammad still said no. And then Muhammad married her.
Well, there you go. Thank you very much.
Well, he still did not give her freedom when she first asked, though.
You have to understand things properly. Let's get a better example, a more profound example. Maria al-Qibtiyya. I'll take that as well. Okay. No problem. Maria al-Qibtiyya is Maria the Copt. Yeah, she was given as a gift to the Prophet Muhammad, and she was a slave in the Egyptian Byzantine Empire. She was given as a slave by the Christians to the Prophet Muhammad. What he did is that he made her what you call Umm Walad, which is that he had a child with her, which his name is Ibrahim, who died in his infancy, which gave her pretty much all of the rights of a wife, because Umm Walad in Islamic terminology means she gets all the rights of the wife. Now, the point is, you have to understand that because the Prophet Muhammad came in a place where there was slavery, you had to deal with the issue. Like Bilal ibn Rabah, he was a slave, the black man. Abu Bakr Siddiq, he bought him, he had to buy him in order to sell him. Same thing applies now with Maria al-Qibtiyya. The Prophet had to accept her as a gift in order to give her the rights of Umm Walad, which means that he had to accept her as a gift first, He had to accept parts of the slave trade in order to fix it. So this is a realistic, practical, pragmatic way of dealing with the problem of slavery. Now, you're here in the 21st century. Maybe your great-great-great-great-granddad was a slave owner. I tell you something, bro. If you look at the, let's be fair, and you're wearing the kind of hat that they used to wear in the colonial
I just told someone I'd be wearing a straw hat, so this is so they can identify me.
No problem, okay. I'm just having a joke with you.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
But what I'm saying is that the West, in order for it to come to a place where Islam came to, had to develop for a thousand... So basically, Islam was 1,400 years before the West in this thing.
Well, abolition of slavery in many Arab Muslim countries didn't occur until 1960.
This is once
1928.
Again, yeah, true.
That was Iraq. 1960s is the Gulf States.
Okay, thank
and,
you very much.
But Mauritania, I don't think, like 2000. So.
Well, I mean, look, if Islam was going to be judged on what Muslims do, then I might as well tell you you've won the argument.
Because he did kind of decide to say, the West was a thousand year behind Islam on slavery. So, like,
yeah, no.
I thought I'd bring it into that realm. But we don't need to go there.
No, we do need to go there. It's a good thing you've said that, because now what you've done is you've created another straw man. And a straw man for a man wearing a straw hat is something which is an easy... Well, basically, what is a straw man argument? A straw man argument is when you cannot deal with someone's main argument, they create another argument.
I'm still waiting for you to talk about Jalaria.
Why is it? No, hold on. Why is it a straw man argument? It's a straw man argument is because you're conflating what Islam is, which is primarily Quran and Sunnah, hold on, with what Muslims do. And I'll tell you something, if you do that, then I'll tell you, I'm not going to defend Muslims, because I know Muslims are sinful people that have done bad things in the course of 1,400 years. If I was going to stand here and defend Muslims, I would lose every argument. You know, I'm not doing that. Maybe not every argument, but I'd lose arguments. I'm here to defend Islam. So what I said, the Western discourse, I was talking about the Western legal framework. Let me tell you something you didn't know. Did you know that in the abolition of after the abolition of slavery, even up until the 1940s and into the Second World War period, that when they said the abolition of slavery, they didn't actually mean it in a full sense. And it was a part of, or was a clause in the law that the slave owner would be called now the boss, and he would continue having the slave in their house for 6 years. And this was called like an apprenticeship. It was referred to in British law as an apprenticeship. This was in 1940s. Now we're talking about, you said 1918 Muslim country. So that, here we're talking about something in the West that occurred, which is almost tantamount to slavery, which actually, if you think about it deeply, is more closer to our time than, than the Muslim.
Like if that's true and not a slight misrepresentation of the kind of British and legal system, then okay, great. Like, but I'm a little bit skeptical about that. I'd have to go away and read up on it. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Maybe I got the dates wrong. Yeah. You can double check.
But in terms of Jawaria, though,
yes,
kind of, she did ask. Please let me go free first. I believe that this is true according to the Islamic sources. And then her father did come and try and ransom, do the ransom process.
Before, the way it works, generally in Islam, if you marry, if the Prophet Muhammad said, and you've admitted this yourself, he married Jawaria.
In the end, yes.
Not in the end. Generally, that was what was that was the procedure.
Initially, she tried to leave Muhammad.
No, it wasn't. It didn't work like that. Didn't he try to leave? Where's the evidence for that?
I'd have to. Okay. It's initially from Wikipedia, but I think we'll find an Islamic source in the end, though.
But the thing is, you have to understand that Islam itself, it forbids forced marriage.
Yeah.
And there's hadith from the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam himself, which says that if the woman doesn't consent to the marriage, then the marriage is invalid. So here we have to understand something, right? Generally speaking, you couldn't make the case here. It would be very difficult for you to make the case that Jawaria was being forced to be married to the Prophet Muhammad.
Well, no, I'm trying to make the case that it's an example where a slave in the possession of Muhammad asked, please, a war captive that he possessed, asked, can I leave?
No, what happened was, she was given full rights, as she would have to be given, when she was married to the Prophet Muhammad. And as I said to you before, this was one of the strategies that was employed by the Prophet and all of the companions in giving, because you have to play by the rules. You have conventions of the time. you have slavery going on. How are you gonna deal with it? You buy a slave, you sell the slave. You buy a slave, you free the slave. You buy a slave, you marry the slave. All of those things eventually lead to the freeing of the slave, which is the objective. So here, it's very difficult for us to make the argument, if you want to make the argument, that Islam actually is a system which it attempts to bring in slaves. That's an impossible argument to make. Especially in the Quran, it says, وَمَا أَدْرَاكَ مَالْعَقَبَ فَكُّ رَقَبًا. In chapter 90 of the Quran, what would make you know what the good way is? It's freeing slaves.
Okay, but so the best source I can find at the moment is from a book written by Rodinson, I suspect that kind of the source will eventually be Ibn Ishaq and Ibn Hisham,
his which sirat. Is filled with weak hadiths, which we don't accept.
Well, it was before the first hadith collections, right?
No, I mean, the thing is, you have to understand something. The books of Sirah, which means the biography of the Prophet Muhammad, they don't intend to only put in strong or authentic hadith.
Okay,
so the authors of such books, it's not within their remit to just put in strong hadiths.
Okay. Yeah, they didn't do the full kind of process.
No, they didn't want to, because what they assumed was that it matters to do with history, that it's not needed to do that.
Okay.
Why? Because it's not going to have a practical implication on our creedal life. It's not going to change our creed, and it's not going to have a practical implication of what we do. So, in other words, the books of Sirah, the books of biography, are filled with weak hadiths and sometimes even fabricated hadiths.
Okay.
We don't accept.
Okay. If you don't want to accept that one, that's fine. Yeah, I don't mind.
You understand this point?
Yeah, I do understand. Okay.